I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next interview was a real treat for me. Susan Kutera is a filmmaker talking about her new film, Living in the Future's Past. This is original filmmaking. It's beautiful filmmaking. It's a challenging piece. This film is about so many things. And as you'll find out as Susan and I chat, we get into a variety of layers. This is a film about evolution. This is a film about ideology. It's a film about asking better questions. This is a deeply existential and philosophical piece about what it means to be human and what it means to make choices, but more importantly, to make the right choices, or to maybe even make different choices. And I think you're going to really find this a fascinating film and a very interesting interview with Susan and I. The film's produced by Jeff Bridges and narrated by him as well. And many of you may know he's a photographer and clearly has an eye for existential and deeply philosophical thinking in this film. You're gonna see this, I think, as an invitation to see the world and to interact with it in a new way. We talk about archaeology and anthropology and object-oriented ontology. Please don't let that scare you away. I think you're going to find it really deeply interesting. And things like desire and choice and consumerism, it's quite fascinating and quite an interesting and, as I said, beautifully creative and unique film that I think you're going to really love. So look for it. It's hopefully coming soon to a theater near you. Susan Kutera coming right up talking about her new film, Living in the Future's Past. And don't forget face2facelive.ca for over 350 interviews now with filmmakers and philosophers and thinkers and writers. And if you want to get behind what I'm doing, you can do that and help support the work here at Face to Face. You can do that through patreon.com. Coming right up, Susan Kutera talking about her new film, produced by Jeff Bridges and narrated by Jeff, Living in the Future's Past. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today. Susan Kutera, a documentarian filmmaker, is here with us today, a producer and a writer, to talk about her new film, Living in the Future's Past. Susan, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is a tough one to know sort of where to dive in. I mean, I just want to talk about the title for the next 20 minutes, you know, because I think the implications are pretty profound. But tell me a little bit about the production itself. So produced by yourself and by Jeff Bridges, narrated by Jeff Bridges, which is a pretty pretty amazing coup for you guys, I would think.
He's also in it.
He's also in it. Yes, exactly right. And I'm going to tell the audience right now, you've got to watch it right through to the end because the end scene is just so worth the price of admission. It's fantastic. Mm. Anyway, congratulations too on the film, Susan.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Yeah, it was a 2-year process. Jeff and I had a very good executive producer. His name is Jim Swift. And he really gave us free rein so that we wouldn't fall into any ideological traps. You know, we didn't have any sort of preconceived sort of way we were going to do this.
Right.
And Jeff and I had a visioning process that we went through where we wrote down all the things that we thought, well, if we're going to contribute this, you know, what could we look at? How could we do this in a way that we would be filling gaps that we saw in what's out there?
Right.
And I think we achieved that. And so, you know, we FaceTimed a lot. And we interviewed some very amazing speakers. But the film's unusual. It's kind of it turns the documentary genre upside down. It's not like the type of film you can go and maybe like leave and go get some popcorn and come back and still be with it. You
right,
have to really,
right.
You're able to stick with it though.
Well, and what's fascinating to me is Susan, what's fascinating to me is you cover so much ground in the film. So, I mean, what I love about any great film, but any great documentary in particular, is it's kind of sometimes hard to actually put your finger on what exactly is, you know, is this really about? I mean, we're talking about the human race. We're talking about choice and about the environment and about climate and about, as you say, ideologies and belief systems. I mean, there's just so much that you've incorporated. Was that intentional going in? Like, did you have that up on the whiteboard? Was that storyboarded for this?
Yeah, well, we were very interested in bringing in anthropology and evolution and looking at society almost from the viewpoint of animals and
right,
how animals
right.
do things as well. I mean, but it is hard to describe. I mean, the film's 85 minutes, and by the end of the 85 minutes, it feels like a cohesive whole. Whereas if I were going to try to pick it apart and just say, well, it had this and this, I can do that, but it's not going to have the same impact. But we also were very turned on by this one philosopher who's also in the film. His name's Timothy Morton, and he really makes the way you think kind of turns it in a different way. I can't really describe it. It's sort of based on object-oriented ontology, where you strip away your judgments and you're able to see things in a completely different way. So that part I liked, but then also the whole energy aspect.
He's got such a great accent too.
He does. Yeah, he's from England. And by the way,
Susan, I think this may be the only podcast, I think I've published about 360 now, where we've actually spoken about object-oriented ontology. So I just wanted to toss that out there for my listeners. That's fantastic.
Right.
It's fantastic. Well, it's like trying to take away that all those sort of presuppositions, right? All those preconceived notions. And like you say, falling into those, as Jim said to you, falling into those ideological traps.
Right. That's right. And so, you know, it's a film for everybody. It's Jeff likes to look at things as an invitation. We're not saying, hey, we're going to hit you over the head. You've got to learn this stuff. It's really an invitation to learn about these themes that are often overlooked. But we feel like these are the keys that we need in order to take a good long pause and think about what we're doing, think about why we're doing
right.
certain things, but then also not forget that there are physical realities in the world, which I think a lot of us have wishful thinking.
you know what's so interesting to me? I mean, I want to go so many places with my questions, but, you know, it's the simple things. It's the little things. I love the way that this really is about that causal connection about every single decision that we make, right? This is really a profound film about choice and about the responsibilities that we all have from getting out of bed in the morning to the kind of car we drive and the kind of food we eat and just so simple and yet so profound.
Right, right. But I think it also shows the, I know we talk about the superorganism.
Yes, yes.
In there. And so when you start to see all of society in this other way that works for animals as well, maybe not be working for us so well. It's a lot about how we just move things around, move things from here to there, move ourselves from here to there, all the supply chains. But we don't go into any of those nitty-gritty details.
Right.
I think that once you start, it's almost like improvising to a different piece of music after you've seen this. You don't have to know exactly what to do, but you kind of will know what to do after you learn about these different themes.
So you've just come out of a film festival in the U.S. The film is a couple-year project. You're about to sort of move out into the circuit, I suppose. Do you have a sense for how the questions people are asking already coming out of this? I think Jeff and you hosted the screening with a Q&A afterwards.
Jeff couldn't be there.
Oh, okay.
He's filming in Vancouver, but we did it in Santa Barbara. We had a wonderful, we screened two nights. We filled both theaters. One of them was a 600-seat theater.
Nice.
It was wonderful to share it with all these people. And what I got out of the Q&A after is the whole part about energy, which I understand, because when I went into this, I didn't also understand how this sort of works. And I'm not talking about solar panels and things like that. It's just the whole flow of energy, fascinating. So that definitely came across. And then the whole anthropological, evolutionary part of how our brains work, that came across, I could tell,
right.
from the Q&A. And people just love the imagery because it's not a depressing film.
It's so not a depressing film. And it almost should be, you know?
Well, it's about blurring of boundaries too, and so we didn't forget that we're not the only animals in town, right? So we didn't forget about the other beings that we share this planet with.
I love some of the profound questions that come up in the film, not only the explicit ones, but the implied ones as well. And I think somebody, and I can't remember who it was, it might have been the philosopher from the UK, but when does the end of the world start? Was a question that just kind of knocked my socks off. It's just...
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Is it starting yet?
Is it tomorrow? Should I put that in my calendar?
That's right. Well, a lot of the way we talk to each other is sort of, oh my gosh, the sky is falling.
Right.
And we have to do something now. And in a weird way, that's not working. You'd think it would work, but it's not working so well. And so we try to again turn things around, I think it works anyway. I certainly enjoyed making it. I learned a lot. I noticed that I do things differently. I see things differently. And like I said, the more we're improvising to a different piece of music, the different piece will emerge, because we talk about emergent behavior, all these things, entropy, and there's a lot of interesting stuff in here for sure.
Do you come away from a project like this and say, you know what, we need to go into, you know, maybe committed, you know, passionately committed to two or three other themes that come out of a film like this, and you say, you know, we really need to make part two and three about, you know, these other issues, because, you know, like consumerism, for instance, that's clearly a thematic thread that runs the choices we make and what we wear and what we buy and desire and need. I love that conversation, by the way, that just pops up throughout the whole film and so deeply connected to who we are and where we find ourselves.
Well, and I think, again, we're trying to promote desire, because I think a lot of environmental speak has been about not having, not doing,
not.
And but we can do a lot when we have intense desire, right? We're always going to have desire. That we're not going to beat that out of ourselves. And so if we just shift our desire over a little bit, then we can just do so many things. But again, I the reason I like this film is because it is grounded in that whole section on energy. Because if you really understand that, it's not that difficult to make slightly different decisions, and it has a lot to do with optimal foraging, because we're not so optimal, of course, right now, but we can be. We actually have everything that we need, and we don't have to go into living like medieval monks.
Right.
Not that that's a bad thing.
Right, right.
But we can shift, but obviously we need to do things now, not 50 years from now.
There's a sense where I think it might have been Jeff Bridges' narration at the beginning, where we're living in the symptoms of a reality that we didn't expect, which I just so love that phrase. And is that kind of the frog in the pot that's boiling that doesn't notice it? Is that the implication of that? Is that what you were suggesting there?
Well, I think that when we're talking about tuning in to what's here, not only like what's within ourselves and what's available to us in physical reality, like resources and whatnot, it's also tuning into climate change, which is actually already here.
Hmm.
But you can't see it, right? It's like Timothy Morton would say, it's in the raindrops. It's everywhere already.
Right.
But we just can't feel it, and you can't really glimpse it. It's you don't have a crystal ball to see what things might look like. And the other thing I found interesting with one of the scientists that we interviewed is that it's not really the change itself. Obviously, the climate has changed many, many times in Earth's history. It's how fast it might go.
Right.
And so looking around, like I'm in the Northwest here and all these wonderful trees everywhere, a year of drought here would literally kill everything. So we're talking about very strange weather patterns where animals and plants can't adapt quickly enough.
This notion of the little things sort of making a big difference, you know, incremental change and so on, is something that I've been certainly talking about in my own life for many, many years, and sort of preaching to my students. I teach in international development at Humber College in Toronto, and there's somebody in the film talks about, you know, starting your car is meaningless. But,
right.
but when you combine that, but is it 100 trillion vehicles? Is that did I hear that stat in the film? Which is just,
in the film,
yeah, which is utterly insane.
Yeah,
I forget how many vehicles, but it's a big 100 trillion is a lot. But it's a lot, and when you combine them, the impact is significant. And if we could, as you know, to your point earlier, shift our desire just a little bit, the impact, the change could be significant.
Exactly. That's right. And again, knowledge is power, right?
Yes.
I think that a lot of people, we don't know what to do, right? Oh, what can I, little me, do?
That's right.
And there's a lot you can do. I mean, I always look at it this way, like plastic is just awful, obviously, right? So if tomorrow people woke up and thought to themselves, my God, I am not going to buy one more plastic bottle, there wouldn't be any, because there'd be no one to sell them to. But it's pretty profound, right? I mean,
I was hosting just this snowstorm here in Toronto on Saturday night, and we had a film night, a social justice film night in this not too far from where I live, and we were watching the film Complicit. I don't know if you've seen it, by Heather White, and it's about supply chain transparency and so on, and very social justice edge to it. Anyway, we had a panel discussion afterwards, and a local politician, a member of parliament, was there, and at the end of the conversation, you know, she gets to go, you know, well, what can we do about it? And she said, well, you know what, straws. And she starts
right,
talking about straws. And she said, you know what, when you go, just say no. Just say you don't want it.
Right.
And I just, you know what I mean? It's like such a simple thing, but the potential for the impact is without a doubt profound. Do you think that we're ever going to really believe and see the universe as this, you know, as you say in the film, as a flow of energy? It just... I so love that, but it just sounds like, boy, we've got a ways to go before we can get there.
I don't know. I think so. I mean, I see things completely differently now.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that I'm just instantly radically changing.
Right.
But at least I know what I need to do to be part of that. And but I think people do need to understand, like, I always somebody had asked me, they thought, oh, the film's kind of not positive about sustainable energy sources like solar,
right,
etc. And I,
right,
said, oh, no, that's absolutely not true. I think what one of the authors in the film was suggesting is that instead of wasting all the oil that we have now, we should be using that energy to make a new kind of energy, a real transition. I mean, we transition from trees to coal, you know, to oil, and it's going to take oil to get to the next level that we want to be at. And I also suggested right now, which I believe is true, there aren't any solar panel factories making solar panels. And when you think of it that way, then you're looking at this toxic, precious resource as something we shouldn't be wasting. We should be using it to move into a different way of living and being.
I think for me, you know, your film, and you do it, and you do it philosophically. You do it well. You even bring in the, you know, and we need to chat about this too, I think, a little bit, that sort of the faith versus the science. You touch on that at one point, but this idea of exclusion versus inclusion. Why are we so good at that? You know, pushing others
pride.
Out. Yeah, is it just pride?
Well, I think, you know, I think that create these. I mean, we live in a sea of brains, right?
Right.
And we sort of gravitate towards the brains that think like us, right?
Right.
And then it's so much easier to, I think it's called othering, right? It's those people. It's always those people.
Those people, yeah.
But all the those people, they do it to each other. We do it all the time, and we're in a stage now where we have to live in a larger community. I mean, we already are. I mean, mm-hmm. We came from smaller groups, and now we're living in very large groups, and we're just going to have to get over this this issue of the other.
Well, and I wonder to what degree that question, you know, about the energy and seeing the universe that way, you know, is, well, I mean, clearly it's a much more holistic sort of approach and understanding, but I wonder how much that gets us a little step closer to this idea that we are, in fact, all in this together, you know?
Right. Yeah,
like abracadabra, right? Like how hard is that? And yet it seems, you know, and you bring that into the film as well, just this, the political disparity and the potential for that and the decisions that have been made in a very short history based on things like fossil fuel and pride, for instance.
Yeah, it's kind of phenomenal, isn't it?
It really is.
And yeah, it's pretty amazing. Well, and I as I was telling you before, when we were not speaking on being recorded,
right?
I'm amazed I got this far, because I really do spend my whole life behind a camera.
Right. Well, and you're a director. Yes. That's where you should be. Yes.
And so I am not so well versed as obviously the people who are in the film talking about all these subjects. So I hope if people seek out the film, they will also seek out some of the books and material that the other people have put together.
It's wonderful to me the things that you bring to the surface, the way the film ends, the power of single actions. I think Jeff says, as he's sort of finishing off with his monologue, about single actions have led us collectively to this moment. I mean, that's worth pausing the film, turning on the lights in the house, and having a conversation about. You know, because the decision you make the moment you walk out that door is going to get us to another place, and with a little intentionality, it can make all the difference in the world. I mean, that's amazing. And then the talk about relationships and how all of life is just a series of relationships. I mean, this phrase too that Jeff, I just so loved the whole film, but I love the ending where he says, "All of us held in the arms of the atmosphere." I mean, how poetically profound and beautiful is that?
Yeah. Well, he was certainly fun to work with.
I bet.
I filmed him, that last part, I filmed him in up above on the mountains above Santa Barbara, the Thomas Fire took that whole area out. And then I guess you probably know the mudslide that ensued after through Montecito.
Yes.
His house is a total loss. So he was affected by that. Mm. But
it's horrible.
Yeah. So when I look at that, it looks like such pristine, beautiful area. It's all burned up now.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, which is kind of, I mean, how sort of horribly apropos in light of what you're doing with this film.
Well, I know, and I think that's exactly why we wanted to open in Santa Barbara. I mean, it was a really shocking, the mudslide. Again, we're talking about extremes, right?
Yes.
This mudslide wasn't just your average little mudslide, and 23 people died, I believe, but there were huge boulders. I mean, there was so much movement that it brought down boulders like almost the size of houses. It was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Wow.
And I just think we're going to see more extremes like that, and you know, have to deal with that as well.
Near the end of the film, you talk about somebody says what we need, doing sort of a juxtaposed sort of conversation. We don't need 24-hour access to energy. What we need is, I think this is the sort of the quote or the line of thinking, 24-hour access to our feelings. And it's a wonderful thought. And then you lead into this idea of a growing sense of sympathy, empathy, and compassion from an evolutionary perspective, and. Do you think you're going to be potentially accused of being too hopeful?
I don't think so. Like I said, we've just had our first screening. We're going to be in other festivals coming up, but based on the questions, I don't think so. I think it left people wanting to learn more.
Nice.
But it's really important not to feel depressed.
Yes,
important to feel, you don't have to, I don't know if the word hope is the right, you know, if you feel like you've got some agency in the world,
right.
you're more likely to do things rather than feeling hopeless, right? But I think having agency is more important than actually just hope, because hope means you're just maybe just wishing, to me. I think showing people that they actually have real agency in the world is important. But then again, you look at moving into a different way of doing things. You might stick some solar panels on your house, and you can party all the time, right? When the sun is shining,
right?
So, and without harming. Not no animals, you know, because you had to make the solar panel, but it's a different way of doing things rather than just burning it up and it's gone forever.
Well, that's what's so again, and a whole other message to the film, it seems to me, a whole other subtext, and it's just so brilliantly layered, but this idea of innovation, right? And
right.
Innovation, intentionality, adaptation, and I mean, it's all connected to the choices we make. I mean, I'm encouraged by I have a 10 and a 12-year-old, Spencer and Victoria, and the decisions they're making, the things that I wouldn't even have thought of 20 years ago or 25 years
right.
ago. And so that's, I mean, I think that's reason to be more, I guess, hopeful, if we want to use that word. But I love your word agency, because it implies that I am responsible just
right.
as much as the next person.
Yeah, I think someone had said, it's not in the film, but someone had said that we know enough about our unconscious behavior and where it comes from to understand that unconscious means on purpose, although you... So it's,
I mean, the French philosopher Emmanuel Levinas said something to the effect of, quote, we are all responsible, and I more than the rest. And it's,
right.
I think that's kind of what living in the future's past is really to me. But I love the way Jeff near the end, and I hope I'm not tipping our hat too much, or your hat or his hat, but you know, this idea of what are we willing to contribute, you know, and what comes natural to us, you know, I'm pretty sure it's on the poster. What kind of future would you like to see, or something along those lines, is a question
right.
you ask. And,
yeah.
To say that it's layered is a bit of an understatement.
Right. It's a great film to enjoy, I think, but also to bring people in to watch, people who might not be thinking certain ways. If you bring them, it's not threatening.
and audiences can find out more about it too, livinginthefuturespastfilm.com. From what Susan tells me, the site has just come live last few days. Lots of information there about cast and the filmmakers and the synopsis and so on, and a list of the festivals you're going to be heading to. And did I also hear you as well, right, Susan? It's going to get a theatrical release too, right?
Yes. We've got a great distributor. She distributed my last film, but we decided to savor this one.
Nice.
And then we just love festivals and theaters because people come, they see it together, they get together, they talk to each other, and then it'll be in wide release in the typical places you find stuff like Netflix.
So great. Well, I'm absolutely thrilled for you and for the conversation that's going to develop as a result of this film and the conversations already that have started, no doubt, and I hope everybody sees it. It's a beautiful film, and it's an important film as well. We've been talking with Susan Kuchera here today, directed her latest film, Living in the Future's Past. You really do need to get out and see it. Susan, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you. This is wonderful. And I'm so glad that you saw the film. It made it easier for me.
That's true. It was a delight. And I'm looking forward to seeing it again with my family, actually.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Thanks. And Jeff thanks you. I'm sure he's just thrilled.
Thanks.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.